Destination Freedom. Destination Freedom. Dramatizations of the great democratic traditions of the Negro people is brought to you by station WMAQ as a part of the pageant of history and of America's own Destination Freedom. During the prophetic years before the outbreak of World War II, an unknown Negro scientist had quietly begun work on what was to become one of the medical achievements of the decade, the development of a practical blood substitute, plasma. In a chapter entitled Transfusion, Destination Freedom tells the story of that scientist, Dr. Charles R. Drew of Howard University, whose work saved thousands of lives on battlefields from Berlin to Bougainville.
They're bombing the shelter, Doctor.
I know. Move him in there. I've got to operate anyway.
Not on me, Doctor.
Yes, on you, soldier. Easy there. We're sheltered. I'm right beside you.
Doc, they'll hit us. Let me up. Let me go.
Hold him, Lieutenant.
Yes, sir.
You're hurt, son. You've got to have something to keep you going until we get back. You need blood. Lieutenant, raise that rack higher.
It's raised, Doctor. The plasma's in.
Good. His pulse is getting thready. Now lift his left arm. Now, insert the needle. There. Let it flow.
Doc, what are you putting in my arm?
Don't move, soldier. You're getting a transfusion.
Whose blood you putting in me?
No one you know, son.
But whose blood?
It's plasma, soldier. This stuff will make you get up and walk like a natural man again. I don't know who this Dr. Drew that invented it is or where he came from, but he must have had guys like you and mine for a long, long time. Now, lie back. Take it easy. Sleep if you can. It's just a simple transfusion. You don't need to know who this guy Drew is. When you get well, maybe you can write to him and thank him. You try to sleep, soldier.
The soldier got up and he did write me. Oh, I am Dr. Charles Drew. I've never given a transfusion on a battlefield, but I work to make them possible. I never expected to develop blood plasma. All I set out that year in 1928 to do, before a war made the world cry for something to help heal its wounded, was to become a good doctor and surgeon, and to continue to win honors in athletics. After taking my AB degree at Amherst, I set out from McGill University Medical School in Canada with my classmate Timothy Clyde. I remember how easily I won athletic awards and how easily I passed the courses in the Canadian University. I remember in 1933 finishing ahead of a small medical class with my friend Clyde, and we worked as interns together in a Montreal hospital. And I remember the night that was to turn the world around for me. It began when I tossed a coin with Clyde to see which intern would work the night shift at the hospital.
Heads, you take the night shift. Tails, I do. Oh, okay, buddy. But just don't be sprawled all over the bed when I come home in the morning. 10 hours in that hospital, and I'm ready to sleep in my shoes.
Don't worry. I'll work tomorrow night.
So long, Lucky.
See you in the morning.
He calls me Lucky, and he left me to read and doze and fall asleep. And early in the morning, I discovered how lucky I had been. The knocking woke me.
Oh, Clyde, is that you?
Yeah. Gosh, you think you'd remember to carry your key sometime.
Why? Hey, Dr. Beverly. Come in, sir.
Dr. Drew, I wonder if you could come with me right away.
Sure, doctor. Emergency case? Can't Clyde handle it?
I'm afraid Clyde's the case.
What happened?
The hospital caught fire. Most of the doctors on duty were caught in it. Some are dead.
Clyde?
Your friend's sinking. Come on, let's go.
I went through the shambles that had been the hospital. I walked through the cots of shocked, burned, dazed men who had been my fellow workers and stopped at the one for Clyde.
Well, there's nothing we can do now. We're too late.
Oh, there's nothing we could have done if we'd gotten here earlier. The fire got him first.
Death didn't come from the fire, Drew. It was from shock. Something could have prevented that.
What?
A pint of blood.
I puzzled over that pint of blood. And I went through the hospital and learned how many cases could have been made to walk away cured if there had been fresh blood to circulate in the shocked and sick bodies of the injured. When the truth had troubled me too much, I threw away my track shoes and went up to Dr. Beverly's office.
So you think you're interested in learning all about human blood?
I'm sure of it.
Well, Drew, I've carried on research on blood transfusions for many years. Someone's got to take it further. In the next few years, we'll need to know far more than we do about transfusions.
Well, I'm ready to learn.
Well, they say I know more about the business of blood than anyone in Canada. Perhaps. But you'll begin learning from those who knew nothing about it. The first doctors who dared believe it could be done. You'll follow them from the first historic day when men tried to transfer foreign blood into the veins of another up to where we are now. Then you'll know what we'll have to do. We'll start with the first doctor, an Italian who believed he could cure the Pope.
So, I began probing to the past of men who had first fumbled for a way to substitute healthy blood for bad. And then I got a glimpse of the goal ahead of me. For 5 years, I put myself in the place of every physician who had attempted a transfusion. And I began with the Italian barber, who in 1492 was called in to cure Pope Pius VIII, and who was met at the door of the Pope's chamber by a suspicious cardinal.
Yes?
You sent for me, sire? I've come.
We sent for a physician to heal His Holiness. You're the barber of Milan.
And also the best physician in the state, Your Highness. I've heard about His Holiness. I've come to heal him.
You believe you can do what all the physicians here have failed to do?
I've discovered a new kind of elixir, sire. Something the others overlooked.
Come in. Let us see it.
The barber of Milan followed the cardinal into the Pope's chamber, and behind him were three husky boys.
Well, barber, where's your new kind of elixir? I don't see any.
If you'll just look at these three husky lads, Your Highness, you'll see all the medicine I carry.
What are you talking about?
Health, sire. They've got it.
What good will that do, His Holiness?
Wouldn't it be wise if we could transfer the health of these lads into His Holiness?
If you've come here for foolishness...
But is it foolishness, sire? Think of it. Isn't good blood the sign of youth?
Well, it's commonly accepted as such.
Well, then let me do as I say. By putting the blood of these healthy lads into the veins of His Holiness, he can become as strong as they are. Otherwise, as the physician said, there's not much hope.
No, otherwise there's not much hope.
Would you pass up a chance to heal His Holiness?
Heaven help me. Very well. Come into the sick room. You may try it.
The barber got his permission, and with the three husky boys, he entered the Pope's sick room, peered at him from the side of the bed.
Yeah, we're not a day too early, if I read the signs right. His Holiness is hardly breathing.
This elixir of yours... Have you tried it on other patients?
Would I try it first on His Holiness if I hadn't? I sent for a pail and some glasses. I'll do the rest.
Very well. But if anything happens to His Holiness, you know what to expect.
I expect, sire, to see His Holiness get up and walk as well as these lads in less than a week.
Very well. Go on.
Come, lads. Come close to His Holiness. The world will look back on your deeds today with admiration.
I looked back the hundreds of years to the first transfusion and followed it until the barber had drained pints of blood from the husky boys and forced it into the veins of the Pope. And when it was over, he called the cardinal.
His Holiness is resting well now. You can see his breathing is quicker and stronger. Just let him lie still a while. If there are any complications, call on me.
His Holiness will want to thank you himself. Well, good day, noble barber.
The news spread through Italy that a new physician had found a way of interchanging old blood for new. Everyone heard of it, except His Holiness. In a week, he died. and the lads who had opened their veins for the experiment followed him.
In pronouncing the death sentence on you, Barber Pasquale, the state warns other experimenters who have picked up your practice that henceforth any attempts to interchange the blood of human beings will be considered murder.
And it was murder for 200 years. And men gave up the idea of transferring blood. Until one night, in a village in England in the year 1665, an English doctor came home to find his wife nursing a sick lamb.
Well, Mary, you're still nursing that lamb.
Richard, can't you do something for the poor little thing?
Well, my practice is with people, not animals. Here, let me look at him. Seems to have lost quite a bit of blood from that dog bite.
He'll die. Isn't there something we can do?
Only one thing can do him any good. Blood. I don't intend giving him any of mine.
Oh, be serious.
It's against the law to transfer human blood, too. But it isn't against the law to transfer blood from one animal to another.
What are you talking about?
Suppose we could get another animal who had enough blood and simply pumped it into the lamb, say our goat. Oh,
now, Richard, if anyone saw you doing that...
I know. I'd be accused of witchcraft. But we'll wait until night comes, and if the lamb is still alive, we'll try it.
That night, Richard Lord, the English doctor, took a step that was to revive the idea of blood transfusions all over the world.
If the neighbors see us, Richard...
Now, they won't see us. They have the goats tied. Now, tie the lamb's feet.
Well, what'll the other doctors say if they find out?
All we're trying to do is to see if the blood of the goat will help the lamb get well. Now, they're tied. When I make the incisions, you'll slip the tube quickly into the place I mark, understand?
I do.
Now, get ready. All right. Now, when I open a vein in the goat, connect the tube there.
The tube had been connected, and the blood of the goat flowed into the blood of the lamb. And somehow the lamb lived and grew. And the doctor repeated his experiment again and again until he was bold enough to report it to the world.
I, Dr. Richard Lord, have proven beyond the shadow of a doubt that the blood of two animals can be interchanged freely without danger of complications, and that the strength of one can be transferred into the body of another.
Well, if animal blood is good for animals, why is it not good for human beings?
A French mathematician, Dr. Jean Dienis, asked that question 2 years after news of Dr. Lord's success had swept the world.
In fact, my calculations prove that there are some unusual properties in the blood of lambs that should make them match human blood. Are you willing to let me try it, Monsieur Papin?
Yes, try anything, doctor.
Good, we shall prove this act of blood transfusions is indeed a very simple affair. Bring two healthy lambs here for my patient tomorrow, nurse.
The lambs were brought. The incisions were made. The blood of the lambs flowed into the sick Frenchman. And a very strange thing happened when Dr. D&E knocked on the door of his patient a week later.
Is Monsieur Papin... Monsieur, you're up.
Thanks to you and the blood of the lamb. May God bless you, doctor.
God, of course. But the king will make me his chief physician for this. I have made a sick man well with the blood of a lamb. Thank you, Monsieur Papin.
But aren't you going to let me pay your fee?
Fee? We are both benefited by this. Hereafter, others will pay me my fee.
And thereafter, for a short, mad month in France, others did pay the high fee of Dr. Dienis for the injection of sheep's blood he claimed healed the sick. And the claims went uncontested until his fame brought him before the French court and the sick duchess.
And you think that the blood of the lamb can cure me?
It has cured 4 French men, madame. I am certain it can help a French woman.
Bring in your lamb.
And the doctor brought in his lambs and made his incision and let the mixed blood with that of the duchess flow with that of the lamb. The news swept France, that the Duchess had taken the new cure, and the doctors of five nations gathered around her bedside to watch the work of Dr. Dierney.
Oh, now, if you gentlemen will step back from Her Highness' bed. There. I'll awaken her and show you the results of transfusions. Madame, she sleeps very soundly, you know. Madame!
The transfusions had put the Duchess to sleep forever. Such a storm of bitter discussion was aroused by Dionysus' unfortunate experiment in the transfusion of animal blood to human beings that he was brought before the French court on a charge of murder. He was finally exonerated in 1668, but the French Parliament was moved to action.
In the name of His Majesty King Louis XIV, we, the representatives of the people of France, do hereby prohibit, under penalty of death, all further experimentation on human beings in the practice of the transfusion of blood.
The magistrates of Rome were so impressed by the action of the French Parliament that they passed a similar decree. And in 1678, the Pope felt moved to issue a special edict forbidding transfusions. And the practice was buried and forgotten for 150 years. But then one night in London in 1828, a patient hammered on the door of Dr. James Blundell after office hours.
Helen, will you open that for me?
Open it and start it to work all night again. Let them learn to come during your office hours if they're so sick. Dr. Blundell's closed for the night, whoever you are.
Please, I've got to have the doctor. Helen. He sounds as if he's in pain.
Oh, now, come on upstairs. It's supper time.
Wait, I'll send him away. I'm sorry, sir, but you see... Helen, help me with him. He's hurt badly.
What's the Saints be with us. He's been shot. Look at his shoulder.
Hurry. Help me get him on the table. There. Now, push that lamp this way. Yes. Bullet in the shoulder. He must have walked a long way.
Why do you see that?
Pulse is hardly perceptible. Feel it.
He can't live.
No, he can't. Not unless he gets more blood.
John, you're not thinking of...
transfusion. Yes. It's the only way.
But if they find out about it...
A pint of blood and this man may live. Without it, he's sure to die.
Where'll he get the blood from?
From me.
John!
Now, hurry, Helen. Prepare the table. You'll make the incisions and connect this tubing to our arms.
John!
Please, Helen. There's more than one man's life at stake. If I'm right, we can prove it to the medical authorities, and millions can be helped. Hurry!
The doctor hurried through with the transfusion, slipped a pint of his blood into that of the dying man, put the patient to bed, and in the morning touched him gently. And the patient was still alive.
We were right. That first doctor who tried to transfer the blood of young men into the Pope was right. Human blood can mix with human blood.
Then why did his patients die and yours live?
I don't know. Perhaps there's, well, some that will mix, others that won't. We'll try more transfusions, and we'll report our findings to the medical authorities.
Blundell tried again and again, and luck was with him. For somehow the patients lived, and the authorities accepted his findings without understanding how it was done. And the question of blood interchanging became the talk of medical conferences across the continents. Chairmen rose to consider the new possibilities opened by Blundell's discovery.
The society has called together its experts to discuss tonight the vital questions concerning the new blood discovery. It is now generally accepted that the blood of human beings can be interchanged. Likewise, that of animals. Now, the first question to consider is the possible effects of future transfusions. If the blood of a little dog is injected into the blood of a big dog, will it make the big dog smaller or vice versa.
Mr. Chairman, my club is most anxious to find out if the blood of a man and wife who could not get along were interchanged, would it make them more harmonious?
I say, scientists, if the blood of a fast horse is injected into that of a slow racehorse, will it improve his speed?
If the blue blood of a king is transferred into the red blood of a commoner, will it make him an aristocrat?
Gentlemen, if the blood of a German is injected into the blood of a Frenchman, what happened there?
And the question that seemed odd had to be answered. And in Vienna, a doctor working quietly in his laboratories had made a discovery that made him wonder how Dr. Blindell was able to transfuse blood from one man to another without a fatality.
The doctor certainly had an unusual amount of luck in his transfusions, for I have discovered here that there are four distinct types of human blood. Each must be matched accurately, or the blood will clot and cause death. There is type 1, which can be given only to patients whose blood belongs to the same group. Type 2, which can be given to patients showing type 1 or 2. Type 3.
This was the greatest single discovery in the history of blood transfusion. But even with this important knowledge at our command, transfusions were still slow and few. Whole blood could not be kept for any length of time without spoiling, so that it was difficult to make it available when needed. The conditions in which transfusions are indicated are usually emergencies, and there was no time to find a donor and match blood types. And when whole blood stands for a while, the red cells float to the top, leaving the fluid plasma, and the two may be separated. And it was known that it was the cells that spoiled, that the plasma could be kept for indefinite periods without change. But no one had thought of using it for transfusions when the First World War came. Blood had flowed freely and thousands died for the lack of it. And over, I studied the heritage the blood doctors had left me. Over and over in the Canadian University, I went over the ground the doctors had covered in their search to find a way to transfer healthy blood into the human body easily, quickly. And when I finished the study, 5 years had passed, and the medical director had decided that I could carry on where he had left off.
You've covered the past thoroughly, Drew. You know as much about blood transfusions as any man alive, including me.
And I still don't know how to match blood without first going through the trouble of typing it.
Oh, you're still working on that?
Yes. Blood transfusions according to blood types are all right, when you've got the right types on hand. But it's still too slow, Doctor.
Oh, I agree. Transfusions didn't help much during the World War. You don't have much time on the battlefield to locate a man's blood type. If the Second World War comes, they'll have even less time.
You say that as if the Second War had already started.
Oh, you can see it coming as well as I can, Drew. You know enough about blood to know that whenever a country begins preaching the virtues of pure blood, it won't be long before someone shows them they're wrong. There's going to be a big need for transfusions very soon. You can see it coming.
I saw it coming, and I decided to take up where the other doctors had left off. I went looking for a way to interchange human blood without having to match blood types.
That's a good project you've mapped out, Drew, but no doctor can carry it out alone.
I know. I need help.
That's why I want you to team up with a young fellow who spent a lot of time in India, Dr. Scudder. He's down at Columbia University in New York. He knows as much about blood as you do. Now, perhaps between the two of you, you can find the secret of plasma.
I went to New York, and I met the new doctor, and together we probed into the possibility of using the living plasma. And one day, while pouring plasma into a jar, I absentmindedly poured all the samples we had collected into the same jar.
Now, what in the world did you do that for, Drew?
I'm sorry. My mind was somewhere else. I guess we can't separate that stuff now.
Are you kidding? It'd be like splitting waters. You can't tell one man's plasma from another in that jar you filled.
No, you can't.
Well, may as well pour it out and go get some more blood donors to start again.
We had just about every kind of blood there is in that plasma.
Of course. What are you thinking about?
I was thinking that perhaps with all the plasma mixed this way, it still might be good to use.
How can it be?
Well, look, mixed together this way, Do you suppose it might all become neutralized and healthy? I asked the question, and I knew there was only one way to find the answer. If it were good blood, it meant that we could make a giant leap forward and could collect plasma without separating it and without using a so-called matching.
All right. We've made every test in the books to prove it's good plasma. We've experimented with the animals and found that the stuff does neutralize in the pool. There's one trial left. Head, you take an injection. Tails, I do.
Go ahead. Flip.
Heads. All right. You take it.
My partner gave me a transfusion with a mixed plasma. Again and again. And I felt no ill effects from it. Then he took his turn. We remained healthy. We were sure now we had found the right track. We could separate the cells from blood and gather all plasma into one pool. We could dry it out like powder or put it into tubes like paste. And it could be kept safe from bacteria without refrigeration. We tested out plasma around the villages and went on our way to perfecting it when a surgeon operating in the hospital where we worked came to us with an urgent appeal.
Dr. Drew, how near ready is this new plasma you've been working on?
Well, there's still some kinks we'd like to iron out first.
But you're absolutely sure it's the best blood substitute you can make?
Well, why do you ask?
We have a very distinguished patient in the hospital. I'm afraid that unless he gets a fresh supply of blood quickly, he won't make it. We haven't found a blood donor that matches type. Now, will you administer this plasma of yours?
Yes, I could. Doctor, but only... Well, who is the patient?
Mr. Myron Taylor.
I gathered my plasma and went into the sick room. The surgeon had his patients prepared.
He's sleeping comfortably now. Will you want a nurse or will you administer it yourself?
No, I'll do it myself.
I took Mr. Taylor's left arm and found a vein, just as hundreds of doctors experimenting with transfusions through the years had done before me. I made an opening. I let the plasma flow in. It shot through his veins and brought color to his skin. I left him with his doctor and went back to my laboratory. The next morning, I waited for the surgeon to come, not daring to ask for him. He came.
Drew?
Yes?
Mr. Taylor is improved. No doubt about it. The plasma was responsible.
I'm very glad.
And you know, I'm afraid you'd better learn how to make it on a mass scale, Doctor. Looks as if the world's going to be needing it much sooner than we know.
He was right. The world did need the plasma within the next few years, and it was ready when the battle for Britain was on. It was ready when the Second World War began. It became the new blood, the new life of the armies. It was mixed and pooled blood, mixed and pooled from all the races and nations of the Allies that helped defeat the pure blood theories of the Axis. We had built a blood bank.
You have just heard Destination Freedom's dramatization of the story of Dr. Charles R. Drew. Destination Freedom is written by Richard Durham and produced under the direction of Homer Heck. The role of Dr. Howard Drew was played by Fred Pinkard. Others in the cast were Janice Kingslow, Paul Barnes, Everett Clark, Don Gallagher, George Kluge, and Russ Reed. The special music was composed by Emil Soderstrom and was played by Elwin Owen and Jose Bethencourt. This is Charles Chan inviting you to be with us again next week when Destination Freedom will present the story of the great Negro poet, County Cullen. This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.